2 Timothy chapter 2 this morning. 2 Timothy chapter 2. These are the last words, as it were, of the Apostle Paul. And he talks about the time of his departure is at hand. He is ready to go to the executioner at the end of this passage. And without much introduction, he chooses to write the last things that he has to say to a young understudy, someone who has been called into the ministry, someone that I believe the Apostle Paul has a heart for. And he is giving him what I think that he believes to be, with all of his heart, beneficial information for someone who very soon is going to be left without that individual in their life that has meant so very much. And also giving him instruction of what it's going to take for him to survive alone. Sometimes we take a lot of things for granted, particularly in America. We complain about virtually every aspect of our life in America, and yet I've had a standing offer for a long time. Anybody wanted to move, I'll pay your way if you'll just renounce your citizenship and promise never to come back. I have never yet had one person take that up. You say, doesn't it scare you to do that? Not really. Because nobody wants to go. And as he writes to this young man and gives him instruction, he brings an analogy or two to bear that are common in the scripture. And I'll read my text and comment briefly about the other, and then we'll spend some time this morning on what I think it takes to enjoy the life that God has given you. I don't think it is things. I don't think it is riches. I think it's an attitude. And America has lost that attitude. Christians have lost that attitude. And as a result, I find very few people today that are happy. Can I just tell you something? Even before I read my text, I'm happy. My day, if it ended this morning, has been a wonderful day. I don't care what you do or say to me. I made up my mind this morning is going to be a wonderful day, just like yesterday was a wonderful day. I've had a good week. I don't remember the last bad day I had. You say, wow. Well, let's talk about it this morning. Verse number 1 of chapter 2. Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also. Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. And if a man also strive for masteries, yet is he not crowned except he strive lawfully. The first of those considerations is that of a soldier. The second, in verse number 6, the husbandman that laboreth must be first partaker of the fruits. Consider what I say, and the Lord give thee understanding in all things. And so in these first 5 or 6 verses, he brings to our attention 2 individuals that he deems worthy of pursuit, wanting to be like them. One is the soldier, the other is the farmer. I find it incredibly interesting that of the times in American history, and I know American history is no longer taught anymore because it, I believe, goes contradictory to what the direction we want to go and have promised everybody that it's going to be wonderful and great and fine, just like every other group has promised that have fallen into ruins. But here he elevates 2 individuals. Tom Brokaw wrote the book, The Greatest Generation. You'll find that when Tom Brokaw wrote his book, that about 80% of all America was involved in one of 2 trades, and that of being a farmer or being a soldier. There were not a lot of high production facilities at that time. The assembly line was relatively new in the early 1900s. And while Ford was making headway with turning out mass-produced vehicles and other industries were beginning to copy, industry was growing, but there were still far more people living and growing and raising children on a farm than any other aspect of American culture. It is that generation that he classified the greatest generation. He did not title that book based on what his opinion would be, but he substantiates that with facts. Facts of happiness, facts of profitability, facts of home, facts of children growing up. All of the various factors that even today you and I would deem necessary in order to say we're living a good life. At the end of the day, somebody could hand you $50,000 right now. But if you're like the vast majority of people who win money unearned, they lose it within a year. Those people that you see all the time jumping up and down and going, I won, go out and put themselves in such debt. Because you know, if you won $50,000, you can borrow $4 or $5 million. And that's exactly what they do. And then all at once they find themselves impoverished. These people were people that knew how to take care of themselves. They were not bound to society for their happiness. And God blessed them. And so as he talks about these people, he, just like Brokaw, who talked about in those days when somebody needed help, they didn't have to pick up a line and find out what government agency would help them. If someone's barn burned to the ground, very likely there would be another one built on that same piece of property within 2 weeks' time at no cost. Because the people would gather together, and some would bring lumber and some would bring tools, and they would gather themselves together. And do you know what it would cost to build a barn today by today's standards? But in less than 2 weeks, that farmer was back in business. If he grew ill and somehow was incapacitated, the community would gather together and bring their horses or their mules or tractors if they had them, which was very early at that point in time. They would come, they would plow and sow his fields and tend those fields so that farmer would continue to exist. There was a different attitude that pervaded society. And today we are far, far, far richer than those people were in those days. And add 10 more fars to that to talk about these people here. And yet Brokaw would classify America's happiest times to two groups of people. Just as the Apostle Paul would classify the profitability of Christianity and the advance of the gospel to two types of people. The same group over 2,000 years apart. What a thought. And yet he says, first of all, and it is the first we will consider. He said, thou therefore as a good soldier, you're to endure hardness. He brings that idea into mind of being a soldier. I am not a soldier, have never been a soldier. I am the son of a soldier. I am the father of a soldier. And I am the brother of a soldier. So I know something about soldiers. I know something about soldiering. Even though I never said yes, sir, or no, sir, or stood on a parade ground, I did get my hair cut white walls quite often. I did learn to shut my mouth and stand at attention and pay attention. I did learn to finish a job when I started it. And I did learn to say yes, sir, and no, sir. And now at 64, 65 years of age, when somebody asks me a question, I still respond with yes, sir, and no, sir. You say, why? I was taught that was the ultimate of respect, in giving respect to another person. And you say, well, yeah, say what you will. These are the people that survived. These are the people that made our country great back in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. These are the people that fought to give you the life, as bad as some people seem to think it is. I, again, would pay your way to go anywhere in the world if you promised never to come back. Sign a written document, legally binding, that would never allow you back into this country again. I'll get you out of here. You say, well, you might do it for obstinance, but I'll hold you to it. I promise you, you'll never get back in as long as I'm alive. Why? Because people tend to say things about their country they don't mean. And in good sense and in good frame at this day and time, we're in a mess. We're in a shambles. But I submit to you that the problem is not what we need to do in the future. I submit it's the attitudes we need to pick up from the past. Those thoughts and those attitudes that would get us somewhere into the future. You say, well, the past was terrible. The past was awful. When you hear somebody say that, you're talking to an imbecile. I don't care if they've been elected or voted in or voted out. They're an imbecile. You study history, the history of this country. We have moments in this country where horrible things happen. We have terrible moments in this country where we did shameful things that we needed to change and alter. I grant you that. But may I help you with that? As a student of not only American history, but world history, every nation on the face of the earth at one point or another has committed mass extermination and bloodshed of people in their own care and custody. It's not an American thing. Sinners are sinners. Vile people are vile people. And it doesn't matter what flag they march under. They are and always have been and always will be vile people. But there are aspects of life that have made this country far and away greater than this country or than other countries ever have been. I think of Henry Ford, and this is not about American society today, so forgive me, I'll get to my message in a minute. Henry Ford was the first fellow to propose paying his employees to go to school so they could finish and get an education at his expense. Name for me the country that did that. A lot of those things today that people like to say, well, they did this and they did this and they did this, probably are true. And many of them are true. But you know, if you don't combine that with, and they did this and they did this and they did this and they did this and they provided this and they built this and they produced that, you don't get the total picture. Paul said here, Timothy, if you're going to make it, you need to adapt a mindset. And then he gave him two illustrations. And the first one that he gave him, the lengthiest of instructions, was found in that that admonished him to become a good soldier. A good soldier of Jesus Christ. He didn't say join the military. He said become a soldier of Jesus Christ. And might I submit to you this morning that the ability to be a good Christian is wrapped up in the same thing that Brokaw said made a good citizen of our country. And that is to be a good Christian. A good soldier of Jesus Christ. If your life is being custom geared to please Him, if your ambitions are ambitions that say, I would like to do this or this or this, but more than anything, I want to exit this life one day with the ability to say, my life has counted for Jesus Christ. It may not have counted for the family that raised me. It may not have counted for others that knew me. It may not have accounted for people that I went to school with. They may look at it and say somehow, well, that didn't mean anything, but I want those that are closest to me, and I want those that are in heaven yonder to realize my life mattered. My life had purpose. Can I ask you a question? What have you done in the course of your life that anybody's going to remember 10,000 years from now? You say, well, I'm not going to be here. You're going to be somewhere 10,000 years from now. If that book is correct, you're going to be somewhere 10,000 years from now, and people are going to know everything there is or was to know about you 10,000 years from now. And so he admonishes Timothy. He said, Timothy, I'm ready to leave. I'm going to be executed here very quickly for being a Christian. I'm going to be executed for being a preacher of the gospel. That was the mandate of the Roman Empire. They're going to sever my head from my body because I was nothing more than a preacher that preached the word of God. And so, Timothy, here's what I would say. Saddle your horse and get as far away from Rome as you can get and go hide and just make a lot of money and please yourself and enjoy life because this Christianity stuff is a dead-end road. That's not what he said. He said, Timothy, I'm going to put my head on the chopping block and they're going to sever my head from my body as they have hundreds and hundreds of others. But if you want to live a life that is happy and productive and matters 2,000 years into the future. Live for Jesus Christ like a soldier. Like a soldier. I have known a lot of soldiers. I have been around a lot of soldiers. And I have learned that soldiers are not all good soldiers. And so it'd be wrong for me to say that every soldier is just like this. But I would say that if you were to go back to the times of Brokaw and look at those World War I soldiers, that some of them packed up again, even sometimes too old to go into battle, and said, I'll go back and fight again. I fought the first one, I'll fight the second one. Remember a guy lining up and they said, you can't get in the army. You don't have an arm. He had the old sleeve pinned up. And he said, I gave this one in the first big war and I'm willing to give this one in the second one. Boy, we don't see a lot of that anymore. We don't see, and I'm not talking about just being overtly, blindly patriot. They honestly felt something here that said we ought to take care of what we've got. But as Paul talks about them, and as those I've met and known, most of the guys and the men that I've known have been career soldiers or soldiers that have served in time of war and time of battle. I just want to give you some things about a soldier that might help me and might help you in the pursuit of life and happiness. You say, do you think we're going to have to? This is not a message on guns, okay? This is not a message on mass killings. This is a message this morning on the code and the conduct of someone who lives with honor. You say, well, I know you probably know some soldiers that don't live with honor, but that's more about you because of the company you keep. I know some individuals that are top notch that would give their life in a minute for this country. If no one else was going to die, they'd give their life in a minute for this country. You say, what is that? Call it foolishness. Help yourself. What is it you'd die for in a minute? Are you just a coward with no purpose in life? Every individual ought to have something. They'd say, here's what I'd die for. No problem. Someone said, if you don't know what you're willing to die for, you've never really lived and never will. I think that's probably true. May I say this? Write them down this morning, if you will. Number one, a soldier is someone who has learned that he must live by a higher standard of conduct. A higher standard of conduct. How many of you have served in the military? Anybody like that? Raise your hand. I've got several of you. You know, if you've served in the military of our country, that the first 5-6 weeks are life altering. Life altering. I remember my cousin talking about it, and he was a Southern fellow. You'd have to forgive him. My family were not educated Southerners. We were just poor sharecroppers with nothing else to do. But he joined the military, and he said when we got off the bus, he said, I didn't know what it meant, but they kept telling all the maggots to line up on the yellow line. He said, I wasn't sure what a maggot was, but I found out pretty quickly, you know. All you maggots, put your toe on this line, and they begin to go down that line. He said, whatever it was that guy ate for breakfast had to be the worst stuff in the world because his breath smelled like a mixture of everything foul there is in life, and he got that far away from your nose, and he spit on you and yelled at you and called your mother names and your father names, and he said, it made him a soldier. We've got a society that just can't take it. You ought to love me. You just don't care. Well, let me help you with that. I don't care either. Give a rip. You don't mean anything to me. Well, what does that mean? It means grow up. Grow up. Listen, if you are just one out of 7.5 billion people on planet Earth, on your best day, you're still just one. And if you got squashed like a bug today, everybody else's life would go on. And I know we might gather for a funeral as we have on hundreds of occasions, and people would mourn your passing and they would celebrate the life you live. But tomorrow they'd get up, go right back to work. They'd eat the same bologna sandwich for lunch. They'd watch the same movie tomorrow night on TV. Let me help you. That's how important your life is. You say, are you trying to discourage me? No, I'm trying to help you have a productive life. First way to have a productive life is simply to realize if you, by your code of conduct, you might be Prince Charming or Princess Charming. But soldiers live according to another code of conduct. soldiers sign their life away, and soldiers have to learn sometimes and oftentimes a new way of living. There's a higher standard, a higher code of conduct. You do get out of bed at a certain time every morning. You do shave and shower in X amount of minutes. You are in full dress on the parade ground at such and such an hour. You will do this. You will do that. They make them do absurd things. I remember Miss Sal and I talked to Rick one time, and I said, "How's it going?" He said, "It was a good day today." I said, "Well, what'd you do?" He said, "Well," he said, "we had to run a 40-mile, I think it was 30 or 40-mile course," and he said, "the last 5 miles, I had to carry my buddy." Now, if you know him, he's a little fella. I said, "What?" He said, "Don't worry about it, Dad. Tomorrow, my buddy's got to carry me." I guess payback. You know, maybe that's it. You learn to say, "Yes, sir," "No, sir." Some people never learned that at home. That's why it's such a shock sometimes. That's that cruel, harsh life I'm talking about. You learn to do what you're told. You learn to obey orders. You learn the reason behind this. You learn how to do this. You learn how to do that. You learn how to take that gun apart in the dark. You learn how to put it back together in the dark. You learn every aspect of it there is. You say, why? Why would you do it? Number one, just to realize that if you're going to live a life that has any matter to it all, you have to have some type of a regimen that governs your life. May I ask you a question? What time do you get out of bed every morning? When I feel like it. You have no regimen at all to your life. You're worthless. You say, "Well, why should I?" Well, if you went to bed at a certain time, you could get up at a certain time. You could regulate your own life. Now, this is probably going to hurt some of you, but I mean the best for you, I think. If I knew who you were, I might not. I don't know. Regulated life. Can I tell you something about a soldier? He gets up when he hears that trumpet blast in the morning, and he is ready to go. He hits the ground running. Can I tell you about a farmer? Farmer hears that rooster crow in the morning and he is out of bed and headed into the field. You say, why? Because their life will matter. We live in a chaotic, disorganized, what I want to do, what about my feeling society? And I don't think that's fair and I don't, oh, shut up. Learn to regulate your life. Somebody said that guy would starve to death next to a refrigerator if it was dependent on him. Somebody didn't fix his food. Shame on us. Well, who's going to fix my food? Fix it yourself. How am I going to get by? Learn to get by in life. Soldier gets out of bed just like that farmer does. You know what he does? He lives by a higher standard of conduct. He's expected to be there when he's told to be there. He's expected to be in bed when it's time to be in bed. He's expected to get up when it's time to get up. He's expected to march from A to B and back from B to A again. He's expected to march to the mess hall so he can eat. He's expected to sit down when they say sit down. He's expected to, I was at the Air Force Academy, preached a wedding out there several years ago, and they took the most magnificent part of it was when they took me to the chow hall. And they told me how many thousand of the cadets that were there packed into that place where they eat. And they were finished eating in, I think, 30 minutes. Done. Out the door. Several thousand of them. And they stopped and stood at attention. And somebody came in and said, "Be seated." And they all were seated. And they said, "Eat." And they ate. And then they got up and they went back. You say, "I wouldn't want to live that way." Obviously, you don't. That's why you'd starve to death right next to the refrigerator. A higher standard of conduct. A higher code that we live by. You know, you'd think that Christians would live by that code. You say, "Well, were you judging me?" Yeah, forgive me. Sometimes I lapse into that, and I know I shouldn't judge. But I know sometimes you just can't get out of bed on Sunday morning and be in church. That's all right. They used to call guys like you sad sacks. All you were looking for is a Section 8 or a reason to get out of the military. Why? "I just can't get up that early in the morning. I need my beauty sleep." A higher code of conduct. Can I tell you something this morning, Christian? Paul said to a young man, "They're going to kill me for living the life I lived. But you need to be disciplined because you may have to die the same way." Have a code of conduct. You know what would be good for some of you to decide what it is in life that's worth dying for? Amen. It would be nice, I think, if we were required by law to have our tombstone before we died and have those that are close to us etch whatever needed to be on it before we died. Number one, it'd help you know what your friends really thought about you. And number two, you'd know whether they were lying or telling the truth and whether you should live up to the esteem they might have for you that was misplaced. A code of conduct. There's a way to do everything. We went to see Rick first time. And again, he's a normal kid, you know, clean up your room, shut up, get in, you know. And when we went to see him, the first thing that stands out in my mind was just fascinating. And that was he was set as he was talking to us and he folded his socks. That's just, I can't understand what a miraculous thing that was. He folded his socks and then he laid them all in a row and measured them to make sure they were all exactly the same length. And I said, are you sick? No. He said, they have to all be in a line in your drawer, in the drawer of your dresser. They have to all be the same exact length. If they don't, you're in big trouble. You say, I think that's silly. I think it's silly that a guy would charge an enemy gun emplacement too and give his life. But he had to learn that principle somewhere. Some things matter that other people may not think matter. May I remind you, you're here today because somebody thought something mattered that you didn't think mattered. A code of conduct. Number two, they have a higher standard of appearance. A higher standard of appearance. Meaning what? Meaning you can usually tell a soldier. You usually tell, in every port I go into, where I'm in an airport, you don't see too many anymore because things have kind of slowed down in the Middle East. But boy, I remember the day you wouldn't get on into an airplane or an airport without seeing five or six soldiers, and they were headed here or there, and they had that duffel bag hung over their shoulder. And I always made it a point to stand and thank them for serving our country and keeping me alive and free. You say, well, you know, what did they do? I don't know. I don't care whether they drove a truck or changed tires. They were doing it for me, and I appreciated it. You say, well, you can say well all you want to. You go, you stand in front of the bullets, and then we'll thank you. They have a higher code of conduct, but I never once wondered, is that a soldier? You know why? Because soldiers all look alike. Sometimes it's hard to tell whether he was a Marine or in the Army, or it was hard to tell perhaps what branch they were in. Sometimes it was difficult to remember what the rank was because it was 2 stripes, 4 stripes, 6 stripes, whatever it was, and try to remember that out, or bars, or trying to figure, is it an oak leaf? What is it? It's hard to sometimes to remember what the order of rank progressed was, but I didn't know that, but I always knew that's somebody serving my country. Shame on us. Shame on us. Because the average neighbor we have doesn't even know we're a Christian. We have a young lady from our church that guards the president. You say, well, wow, she looks like a Secret Service agent. You say, what is that? Well, it just looks like a Secret Service agent. She acts like a Secret Service agent. We're no joking around here. It's just, that's the way it is. I talked to a Secret Service agent one time, and he asked that we had a printing press where we were printing New Testaments, and he was in interviewing us for somebody else that was looking for a job, and he said, can I ask you a question? He said, I just passed by, and he said, there's a printing press in there. He said, forgive me. That's part of the treasury. They examine forgers. He said, that's where we print the money. And he went, he said, don't say that. Learn my lesson. You understand, there's no foolishness. There's no funny business about them. They look that way, but they dress that way. They dress that way. I think Christians ought to be predictable. Can I help you? If you get out of bed on a Sunday morning and put a pair of sweatpants on and sandals and a t-shirt, you might be going to church. But the lady at Starbucks doesn't know that. Now, if guys ask me, had a guy ask me this morning, you going to church?
looking like this.
Where else would I be going at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning? He knew. He knew. You say, well, that doesn't mean anything. Maybe not to you. But if he needs a preacher next week when I pull in, or tomorrow morning when I pull back through, he knows there's a preacher comes through here every Sunday morning. And I, boy, you know, sometimes soldiers, they do a good job. They have a higher standard of appearance. They have, number three, if you're writing them down, I hope you are, a good soldier has a humble confidence. A good soldier has a humble confidence. I remember being in a church service years ago on a Wednesday night when very few people were in church on a Wednesday night where we were visiting, and was sitting there, and just about the time they started shaking hands, which is usually two or three songs into the service, a guy walked in the back door. He had on a flight suit. His little hat was folded up underneath his epaulette. His boots were unlaced, which is not really good as a soldier. But he came strolling down that aisle, and he was shaking hands. And when he got there, I stepped out. And I didn't know who he was. I stepped out in the aisle, and I said, thank you for coming to church on a Wednesday night when you've obviously been at work. And he looked at me, and he said, well, he said, we were on a mission over Honduras this morning, and he said, we got fouled up down there, and he said, I just landed about 15 minutes ago. He was a commander of an F-15 squadron, one of the top in the United States. You say, what was he? He was in church on Wednesday night. Haven't come back. You say, well, yeah, I know, it's just a career. He went on to become the commander of Andrews Air Force Base, and now he's commander of Nellis Air Force Base in Southern California. You say, who is he? He's a Christian that goes to church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday night. Unless he's serving his country by order, he is in church. He has put together a society of pilots across this country that pray for America every day at noon for 30 minutes. You say, what is that? That's a different code than you and I live by. We complain. Well, you know, they just don't sing my favorite song anymore. I'm going to go have to shake my hand. I'm going to have to go find another church. That's a long way from a guy that flies a combat mission over hostile territory and lands, and 15 minutes later, he's in church. It's a different breed, isn't it? They live with a humble confidence. You'd never know who he was. Never know who he was. I've heard him speak on a congressional stage 5 or 6 times. And he won't even wear his uniform because he feels humbled. He'll put on a suit and tie just so somebody doesn't give him respect he's not worthy of. A good soldier, Paul said. A higher standard of conduct, a higher standard of appearance, a humble confidence. Let me tell you something else. Good soldiers are real proficient with their weapon. We have a weapon. We have a weapon. We need to learn those weapons and how they work and why they work the way they work. And we need to understand this book. You say, well, you know, I'm just too busy to read my Bible the way I should. Don't join the army. You'd be a dead duck. Why? You know, this little thingamajigger, I'm just not even sure how it goes. And I don't know. And then somebody else going to put their life in your hands? A good soldier is proficient with his weapon. The Bible talks about the weapons of our warfare not being carnal but powerful. There's a powerful thing. That's more powerful than anything else you've picked up all week right there. That book right there, you know what? You start reading that book and you'll take somebody, and without you even knowing it, just reading that book, it'll cut them to ribbons. And God will get in and say, hey, he's talking about you. And you're not. There's not a surgeon in the world that has a scalpel that sharp. There's not a soldier in the world that has a gun that is that powerful. And here sets a church full of Christians. Well, I'm not sure where that is. Where's the concordance in the Bible? Where's the part that tells you where the books are? And we're going to win the battle. We're going to win the battle. A good soldier lives with a higher standard of conduct, a higher standard of appearance, a humble confidence. He's proficient with his weapon. And then let me say this, he has a willingness to pay in order to win a victory. To pay in order to win a victory. No soldier goes into a combat zone or a combat arena without understanding, today may be my day. Warfare has changed. Lieutenant Commander Lowell Chambers was here several years ago for our veterans dinner. He operated the number one PTSD operations center in all of Iraq and Afghanistan. Years ago, when a soldier was injured in combat, he had to be taken to a medical center where he was operated on and cared for. And this war is a little different because with advanced air power and helicopters, we could take a wounded soldier and fly them to Germany quicker than we could get them to another area oftentimes. And so they were medevaced out of country where surgeons were waiting for them in top-notch facilities. But for those that weren't going to make it, they took them to what they call PTSD training. Well, they put them on the ground and they made them as comfortable as they could. They tried to perform life-saving tactics if possible, and the save rate was very small. Except for Brother Chambers' unit. They had a 97% save rate. So much so that the chief of the Army's Medical Corps thought somebody was padding the books and made a trip. I've got the book in my office that he wrote. And he said, I thought somebody was messing with the figures. I never understood how one unit could have that high of a save rate until I walked into the hooch where they were operating, where Lieutenant Commander Chambers had been operating for 9 hours on a young man that had lost both legs and one arm. He said, I watched as he was thoroughly exhausted, as he put his head over on that man's chest and began to weep and begged God to spare his life. And he said, then I knew why they had the success rate. He stood right back there in the gymnasium and he said, we made sure when we put our team together that at every phase, including the helicopter crews, we had a Christian. Somebody on board, a nurse on board, a triage specialist, somebody in the way. Every phase we had a Christian that was praying. He told the story of that young man who was spared, who came back home and had a family and named his daughter the same name as Brother Chambers' daughter and went off to the military academy as a graduate amputee. You say, how does that happen? How does it, a willingness to pay for a victory? I've never yet met a veteran. They sometimes are very bitter over the way they're treated in America. But I've never met a veteran that lost a limb or was hurt or scarred or disfigured that ever had anything to say about those he fought in combat with other than he was glad to be there with them. Honor. Be careful when you want to talk about other Christians. Be careful when you want to run them down. You say, well, they're goofy. Yeah. Kind of like a lot of soldiers on the field. But they're willing to pay for the victory. And that victory may allow you to come home and not allow them to come home. Boy, wouldn't it be great if we as Christians, what a novel thought, if we could be like good soldiers. If God had just, oh, he did. Write that in the Bible. That a Christian will learn to be like a good soldier. A soldier of Jesus Christ. I'm almost done. A good soldier obeys and follows his orders. Obeys and follows his orders. You say, why is that important? Because they never make sense. At least that's what I've been told. They never make sense because the guy giving you the order didn't have anybody explain it to him. He just got a call from command, and command pushed it down the channel and said, do this, and then 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 the guy said to you, do this. Well, I don't see it. Ours is not to reason why, ours is but to do and to die. That was the slogan. Shut up, do what you're told. I think sometimes being command is probably harder than a lot of people give it credit for. I've talked to a lot of men that have been officers in the military, And some of them suffer as badly as those coming home who were maimed and hurt in combat because they had to give the order for what they knew was probably hopeless. They had to call it down the chain knowing that that guy on the other end, though they may never know who he was likely not going to go home because of it. Sometimes we tend to look at the poor guy that's the ground pounder, and I do as well. I think he's a hero in every sense of the word. But sometimes we look at the brass. So I sit in an air-conditioned office. Yeah, they may sit in an air-conditioned office and decide how many men are going to die today trying to take this worthless place that we have to take in order to facilitate. And I'm going to live with the rest of my life knowing that I didn't just send one of my men, but I sent hundreds of men to their death. For what? A good soldier. A good soldier obeys and follows his orders. And then I'll close with this. I hope you got them down. You say, what? This has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with you if you're a Christian. If you're in the Lord's army, if you're a servant of Jesus Christ, following orders is real important. You know, the thing he left? He didn't leave the crown of thorns. I've seen five of them, and he didn't leave the nails. There are, I think, seven of the nails that held Jesus to the cross in the Hofburg Palace in Austria. I've seen them all. It's amazing because there were only three, but there are seven of them there. I've seen the tablecloth from the Last Supper. I've seen it, laid my eyes on it. I didn't even know there was one, but there. What do you say? I'm saying there's a lot of charades when it comes to Christianity. There's a lot of foolishness and stupidity. I'm sure somebody's got Noah's whiskers if you wanted to see them. If you're willing to pay the price, there's a sucker born every moment in there. A good soldier studies his enemy's tactics. He wants to know how his enemy's going to do things. You know, when we went into the Middle East, and again, that's our most recent, we were unaware that there was going to be an enemy there that was not necessarily interested in killing everybody. They wanted to maim them. I don't know that I've spent a day in the last several years that I've been out in public that I haven't seen some GI with a torn up body. Sometimes it's scarred face. Sometimes he's missing an arm. Sometimes a leg or both legs. Sometimes his face is just contorted and you can see the scars. You say, well, it's just a poor fool. It's a hero, and you'll never be one. You're the coward. A good soldier learns his enemy's tactics. Do you know what the advancement in American warfare has been over the last 5 years and how to fend off IED attacks and those things? Like, we put millions and millions and millions of dollars. You say, what does that mean? Well, it means that that guy didn't get hurt in vain. Our enemy is subtle. The devil won't take any of us out the same way. And let me help you. He's got his crosshairs on you this morning. You say, well, not. He knows exactly who you are and where you are. He knows what it would take to get you to quit. He knows exactly. And you better bolster yourself with some knowledge that says, you know what? I know how he's going to get. You know what your weaknesses are. Do you know where you're weak? Can I tell you the devil is going to hit you where you're the weakest? I know that makes it just probably baffles your mind. He's going to come after you where you say, well, you know, nobody. The devil knows. The devil knows. And shame on us for not learning his tactics. He may know where my weaknesses are, but if I know that he knows where my weaknesses are, then I can bolster and change and alter who and what I am so I can stand when the battle comes. We develop a real fatalistic look when it comes to serving the Lord. And if our country ever develops that fatalistic look, America's gone. And I know we're moving ahead. Let me help you. I know they don't teach history anymore. Go back and look at everything socialism has accomplished in the last 100 years and then call me when you know something. I know that's the way to go. That's the way. It's really helped Russia. Boy, Russia, fine example. Russia is a communist country. Socialism is the foundation of communism. Look at the countries. I had some guy said that the other day, and he came to me. He thought he was smart. I have to give him credit. He said, how about Germany? I said, America built Germany after World War II with billions and billions and billions of dollars because they couldn't even find a place to put a hamburger stand after they got bombed off the face of the map. Well, that was a socialist country. I'll tell you, the best thing socialists can do is they can find a society that's not socialist that they can milk. And when that's done, so socialism. That's why every socialist state in history has always become a dictatorial state where people are told, you work here, you do this, you shut up, you go to bed here. It's kind of like you get put in the army. I wonder someday if maybe the Lord's army will not be learning some military tactics because we were too lazy. Can I say to you this morning, Paul said to Timothy, Tim, I'm going to die. I'm not worried about it. I know where I'm going. I'm not crying about it. I've served the Lord faithfully from the day I trusted Christ on that road a long time ago. I'd like to have a few more days to spend some time with you, Tim, but I know this. I'm going to get this letter to you, and I know you've got a good character. You've got some discipline. You're a young soldier, and I know as a soldier you're going to do just fine, Timothy. But Timothy got that letter, and then that letter was put somewhere and then somewhere else, and here it is. And I got to believe there's maybe a Timothy here somewhere this morning, and probably a lot of people that should be Timothys that would say, God, help me to be a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Help me, Lord, to not just sit around and wait, but to realize that there's preparation to being a good soldier. And it's not talking the talk, it's walking the walk. Let's bow our heads this morning. Can I ask you a question? When the enemy comes, how are you going to stand? I've stood by the bedside of people that lost the one they love more than anything else. And I watched them get into a smile and thank God for how good God was. I'm going to help you with that. That takes some character and some strength. That takes some training. That takes some experience. I've watched people go through hard times and be given bad news and then worse news on top of the bad news. And I've seen them stand. I've seen them sing, "Oh, how I love Jesus," with tears running down their face. And I realized the whole congregation was singing that same song, those same words, but it didn't mean what it meant to that fellow with the tears running down his face. You say, what makes the difference? Good soldier. A good soldier. Good soldiers know the odor, the smell, the sounds of the battlefield. They know what it is to have come through there. They'll always have a camaraderie. And I find that Christians that walk with the Lord always have the ability somehow to find another Christian that knows the Lord and walks with him. But I say to you this morning, you'd be honest and say, preacher, you know, I'm saved. I know I'm saved. I'm glad the Lord died for me and I've trusted him as my Savior. But preacher, I'm all mixed up in this world today. I'm looking for things that don't exist and believe in the pipe dreams of other people. Preacher, would you just pray this morning that God help me to just be a good soldier and understand that he's in control and all I need to do is follow his orders. And it's not going to be long till we're out of here. This battle's almost over. Listen, their commander-in-chief, the devil's on the run. He's just got a little time left and our God wins. And all of the universe one day will unite in one great cry of victory and know that he is King of kings and Lord of lords. We win this battle. And having said that, are you going to be in the parade or are they going to have to ask us to sit on the sideline? And if they let us march down that grand parade, down that street of gold around that throne, are you going to be like some of those that are missing an arm or a leg, or some of those that are a little hobbled because of the price they paid to serve Jesus Christ? And are you going to be the one that walks with just not a scar at all? Not a scar at all. Or you say this morning, preacher, I want to be faithful in the battle. I don't want to run. I want to stand my ground. I want to serve my Savior to the best of my ability.